Thank you for coming tonight. And tonight we're going to talk about Yerma. Here you see a picture of García Lorca. García Lorca was not just a playwright. He was also especially a poet, a writer. He was very involved in theater. And he is actually one of the key figures in 20th century Spanish literature. Here we have a poster of the first representation of Yerma, the one that you see there on stage. And so people who watched the first performance in 1934, they actually saw that poster there. And a little bit of background on Lorca. Lorca was very involved with theater, not just writing plays, but also directing them. And for that reason, he set up a theater company, a student theater group called La Barraca, which literally means the hut. And it was an itinerant theater that moved from place to place and thus was able to bring theater even to the most remote parts of Spain. So Lorca was always a very engaged writer, and he wanted to bring culture to those who normally would not have access to it. So he founded La Barraca. He also enjoyed drawing, and so you can see one of his drawings, and the one Yerma, I found it online, is a student who made that card. But this way you can have a sense of the kind of person that Yerma, that Lorca was. And as my colleague told you, my primary interest is Spanish women writers. So you might wonder, well, why are you dealing with Lorca? Well, because Lorca is one of those writers who actually is capable of entering in the mind of women like no one else. Actually, when I was presenting this talk, I was thinking about Virginia Woolf when she asked the question, well, could Shakespeare's sister actually have been a playwright? No, could she have written like he did? And I think that at the time of Lorca, Lorca's sister couldn't have done what he did. But I think that what he did it also for women who could not have a voice at the time. García Lorca, unfortunately, had a very short life. He was born in 1898 in Fuentevaqueros, which is a very small village near Granada in Andalusia, in the southern part of Spain. And he died in 1936. He was killed at the beginning of the Spanish Civil War. He's one of the first casualties of the Spanish Civil War. He was born in a crucial year for Spanish history, which is 1898. It's the year in which Spain loses its last colonies, so that empire that Spain held from 1492 for four centuries, it's finally over. So Spain has to rethink its identity. And there's a generation of writers and poets, such as Machado and Unamuno, for instance, who actually devote a lot of time to thinking and rethinking Spanish national identity. And Lorca was born in that crucial year. So he grew up reading those writers who had thought so much about what Spain was about. The play we're going to see tonight is Yerma. And Lorca said, Yerma will be the play, the tragedy of the barren woman. It is, as you know, a classic theme. But I wanted to have a new development and a new intention. So he takes the biblical story. Now, the Bible has several women who are barren, who cannot have children, and whose story is resolved in various ways, in many cases in a positive way. What does Lorca do? He takes that classical theme of the barren woman, but it gives it a different development and a different intention. It's interesting to note that Yerma, the word, means barren, unfertile, and it's an adjective that is often used to describe fields. So, in a sense, we can say that Yerma, in her name, she already has this condition. built into her own personality. So it's almost her destiny to be a barren, unfertile woman. Here I borrow the picture that was on the poster because I thought, this is such a wonderful image. And the only thing that I would probably do, if I could, I would erase the mandolin, the tambourine. Why? Because unfortunately, Yerma did not participate in all the fiestas, in all the celebrations where music and dancing was involved. She had a very sober life and sober lifestyle. Yerma, performed in 1934, is considered a second tragedy of this trilogy, of the rural trilogy, which begins with a tragedy, which is Bodas de Sangre, translated as Blood Wedding, and which continues with Yerma, which is subtitled as Poema Trágico, like a tragic poem. And then Lorca was actually planning to write another tragedy, but unfortunately, he died prematurely. So we don't know exactly what the third tragedy was going to be. But he wrote this drama, this play called La Casa de Bernarda Alba, Bernarda Alba's house, that was not supposed to be part of the trilogy, but that nonetheless is often included in that sequence. And a common feature of all of Lorca's play is their use of female characters as protagonists. As I was telling you before, Lorca is one of those men who actually is able of entering the mind of women and really explore their feelings. For that reason, for the fact that there's a predominance of female characters in his play, his theater production is often called Teatro de Mujeres, women's theater. And indeed, Lorca, more than other dramatists of his time, analyzed the intimate drama of his female protagonists as they struggle with strict social norms, with a moral code that defines women and confines women to prospective gender roles. At the time when Lorca was writing, women didn't have, obviously, the freedom that we have and that we have in this country, because we have to remember that not all the world enjoys the same kind of freedom. But he actually focuses on this very strict social code that prescribes certain gender roles for women and for men. And we can see the influence of the Catholic Church and also the influence of ancient unwritten rules that confine women's conduct to a domestic space. And this is a characteristic of the Mediterranean area in general. If you think about it, the shutters, that we see in all Mediterranean houses, they were invented so that people could peek in but could not be seen from outside, because women were supposed to be inside, but there's a little hole in between in which they could see. Women in patriarchy. Many of Lorca's female characters are actually unsympathetic towards other women. So when we think that Lorca is the writer or the playwright who is in favor of women, we cannot think that his women are actually modern liberated women. A lot of them actually are the incarnation, the very embodiment of patriarchal values. And Bernarda Alba, she's really the phallic mother. She's this monumental figure in patriarchal values. In Yerma, we see that other women, the lavanderas, the women who do their washing, the laundress, when they gather together, they display very hostile feelings towards Yerma. As a group, the washerwomen perform the function that in Greek theater was the function of the chorus, which is that of providing a commentary on the action. And what is their commentary? They're all gossiping about Yerma and about the way she actually acts. And there are two aspects that they criticize, which we can think are very antithetical, actually. First, they call her machorra. If we think about the word macho or machismo, it's all referring to men. So a machorra, it would be like a tomboy, like a female, a woman who behaves like a man, who has this masculine characteristic. So if we stick to that definition, that should be antithetical to the idea of her being unfaithful, right? Because if she's not feminine, how is it possible that she actually has affairs? But when women actually criticize her, they criticize her for these two impossibilities, shall we say. On one hand, she's not feminine enough because she doesn't have children. On the other hand, she's probably an adulteress. But, you know, somehow they manage to bring these two, you know, in my opinion, antithetical qualities of a woman into the same discourse. The important thing is that they're criticizing the way she behaves. Okay, what happens in Spain around the 1930s? Obviously, Yerma, per se, does not convey a feminist message, though her actions and those of the rest of the characters question the role of women in Spanish society. And the play can be considered a consciousness-raising text that helps us understand the mechanism of women oppression. An interesting thing is Lorca dies in 36, which is the beginning of the Spanish Civil War that continues till 39. Francisco Franco wins the war, and Francisco Franco rules over Spain till 75. Do you know when Yerma was performed after 34? Can you guess? 61. So we have to wait for the early 60s for this play to be actually performed in Spain. It was performed in Argentina, it was performed abroad, but the regime did not want to see it performed. So I think that that supports the idea that there actually is a feminist message that was not in line with Franco's ideology. Yerma, as I said, it was performed in 34 during the so-called Second Republic, which was a short-lived left-wing government that granted women very progressive rights for that time. If you think that in 31, Spanish women could vote, so in the election of 1933, they could vote. Actually, there were a lot of intellectual women who were against this. And you know why? Because they were afraid that women will vote for conservative parties. Why? Because they would go to church and the priest would actually tell them, well, the right way to vote is for a right-wing party. So they were wondering, is it a good idea to give women the right to vote? But anyway, they had the right to divorce. They actually had to wait till 1975 to regain that right. And they gained more rights within the family, the rights with regard to inheritance and patrimony, and access to contraception. And for that little span of time, abortion was legalized. Under Franco, even contraception was outlawed. The church, law, and customs. At the time, in spite of the fact that Spain from 31 to 36 had a very progressive government, the predominant female idea was that of the angel of the house, el ángel del hogar. She was an abnegative, submissive woman who spent her existence at the service of her family, primarily her husband and her children. And obviously, she had to stay home. Maternity equaled femininity and was essential to female identity. Therefore, if having children means to be a woman, if you don't have children, you cannot be a woman. So that is a piece of the puzzle that is missing in Yerma. So that's why we call it the tragedy on unfulfilled desire, the drama of sterility. Well, Yerma is a young bride who has been married to Juan for 2 years and 20 days. In the initial scene, her friend Maria visits her, and she tells her, oh, Maria announces that she's expecting a child. And Yerma says, oh, you're so lucky. I've been married for 2 years and 20 days. You know, so she's really counting. No, every day counts. She's really expecting this child. And she already indicates that she's conscious that if she doesn't have children, something bad will happen to her, that her personality will not be able to handle it. A prominent critic, Robert Lima, has pointed out these characteristics about Yerma. And we can unpack the meaning of this long quote and see how this really applies to the play. Yerma is the woman tortured by her own mind, whose obsession with maternity drives out all other aspects of the real world which surrounds her. So Yerma has internalized this view of the woman as mother. So she cannot see anything else in her mind apart from being a mother. That's why she's so blinded by this idea that she has to become a mother that she becomes unconscious of all the social norms that actually would make her behave in a certain way because she's so fixed on that goal that she has. This condition causes her rejection of Juan, who is her husband. She cannot take her husband as a lover. For her, she got married to have children. And in fact, when she encounters this old lady as she's on her way to taking food to Juan, the old lady questions her because Yerma wants to know, how do you actually get pregnant? And this old lady said, well, but do you like your husband? And she says, my husband, I took him because my father gave him to me. And she said, well, you have to like men. You have to enjoy them. And she realized that, well, obviously I don't enjoy him. He's my husband because he has to give me a child. So there's that aspect of her personality. So in her mind, Juan's role is limited to that of being the procreator of her child, nothing more. But Yerma is not entirely to blame for this view of marriage. Her outlook is fashioned from the traditional and religious consequences that have been characteristic of Spanish morality. And the church itself has a big role in that. So I took a quote from an encyclical by Paul Pius XI on Christian marriage. And he says that amongst the blessings of marriage, the child holds the first place. And this is interesting to remember because then when we see how Juan acts, we'll see that Juan is not such a good Christian. Because Juan says, well, I'm glad we don't have children because this way we don't spend much money. And even back then, they thought about children and money, right? But if he had been a very devout Catholic, he should have thought, no, the first thing, we have to have children because that's the most important thing in marriage. So the encyclical goes on to say that the creator of the human race himself, who in his goodness wishes to use man as his helpers in the propagation of life, taught this when instituting marriage in paradise. He said to our first parents and through them to all future spouses, increase and multiply and fill the earth. So we know that it concluded, you can read it on your own, saying to bear children and to be mothers of family is the ultimate goal for young women. That's why they have to marry. And Yerma has really inferiorized that idea. Although we cannot, here I put the Spanish version, we cannot only blame the church for that, because the church would also give Yerma some means of finding consolation in her faith. But she cannot find that. What is between Yerma and Juan, there's a very cold relationship, a relationship that is kind of goes between frigidity and impotence. So if you put those two together, it's hard to actually generate children. It might happen, but it's hard. Okay, so Yerma aspires to have children. Juan, on the other hand, he's happy he doesn't have children and introduces the idea of the incompatibility of wealth and procreation. He says, we are doing very well. We don't have any expenses. Yerma feels no sexual pleasure with her husband. It's clear that she's not physically attracted to him. Yerma decides to turn to magic to have a child. So she goes to this wise woman, it's called curandera. She goes on a pilgrimage to try to get pregnant. She is offered other ways of compensating for the fact that she can't get pregnant. What can be one possibility? So since we don't have in vitro insemination, artificial insemination back then, got something else to perform the husband's role, right? So, well, you have to make deal with what you have, right? But Yerma says, no, I will not pick up another man. And actually, we can see that on one hand, Yerma would like to be able to actually generate a child just on her own. Well, now it's possible. Back then, not yet. Because, all things considered, she's not a passive woman. She's not submissive. She's not what Juan would like her to be. On the other hand, Juan, he's been considered the kind of anal personality. He's all devoted to work. He doesn't want to spend money. And he doesn't seem to be too sexually active himself. He's described as seco, which means dry, shy, withdrawn, not warm and giving. He prefers work over family, and he has something of a weak personality. So he's somehow also at odds with his gender role. Another key issue is the issue of honor and reputation. For Yerma, her honor is something internal. She knows that she never did anything wrong. She knows that she never looked at other men and that she would never betray her husband. So she doesn't care what other people say. She knows that she's pure in her heart, and her reputation, in her opinion, depends only on her action. That's why I was telling you she's kind of blind to social norms. She doesn't realize that it's not that important to be good, but to look good. So she doesn't do anything wrong, but everybody thinks she is doing it. So that's what matters, right? On the other hand, for Juan, the idea of honor and reputation is all external. It depends on what other people think of them. You know, he doesn't want people to talk about his wife or talk about him. There's the que dirán, what would people say? No, they gossip about me and I'm going to lose my honor. He's concerned with the way the rest of the people in this village perceive Yerma's behavior. Okay, so we can stop here, and because the rest it's in Spanish. I wanted to give you just a small overview, and I didn't want to tell you the ending, because otherwise it would spoil it. So, hopefully, this has helped you kind of understand a little bit more. You'll see in the play itself that the political element in 1936, the Spanish Civil War starts. There's the National Front, which is the fascist front that will eventually win against the Republican. And so you will see aspects of that played out in the play. And versus the traditional ending, this ending wants to give a little bit more hope. So I'm just going to tell you that. So now nobody will think, well, I know everything, I can save the money and go home. Because that's what Juan would do, right? Okay, well, thank you so much and enjoy the show.
questions, if anyone has any questions.
I got one.
Sure.
Is Lorca, was he married?
No, Lorca was homosexual. No, he was not married.
How else we know how a woman thought?
Sorry?
How else we know how a woman thought? That's why I can't forget.
But your wife is there, so. Yes?
Now, how is his stature compared to that of Juan Rulfo from Mexico among Spanish people?
I would say that, it's a similar status. He's very well known. Most people who are well educated know at least some of his poems by heart. So I don't think there can be a Spaniard who doesn't know who actually García Lorca is. So, and also his plays are really often performed in Spain. And also, I was talking to the director who was telling me that a lot of Lorca's plays are also performed by university theaters, even in this country. So they have this following.
Were you raised in Spain?
No, I was raised in Italy. But they're both Catholic. So I can relate. Yes? Yes.
Strong female characters. Do you know if there would have been any communication, or would the language barrier and everything go? Is it just coincidence?
I'm not sure whether they actually, had any connection. It is possible that he would, but, he is a person who observed the reality he lived in. And actually, in the case of Bernarda Alba, there was a family that lived nearby that was the inspiration for this family. So it's probably the case that he saw situations very similar to the one that he is actually portraying. So, but that would be something to look into. Thanks. Yes? This is actually from Spain. So I thought I had to bring something original.
Can you see the back?
Sorry?
The back of the coat.
Turn around.
Well, Yerma wouldn't have worn something like this. Thanks. Yes, thanks.
I've certainly read things that imply that Lorca might have been murdered by the fascists.
Yes. Yeah, that's... the government recently has invested quite a bit of money to find his grave. And they were digging, and they thought they found the location of his place of burial. But it turned out not to be the right one. And now the financial crisis is so hard that they couldn't continue to dig. But that's the official version, that he was murdered by fascists. He had been with the La Barraca. He was very involved in left-wing activities. During the Second Republic, there were lots of intellectuals who were setting up cultural activities in various parts of the country to bring culture everywhere. It wasn't a secret for anybody that he politically was allied with the left. So, and that and his homosexual condition probably compounded the problem. Yes? To be honest with you, since Juan is supposed to be an agriculture, a farmer, Right. And he eventually buys sheep. And it's kind of hard to think about Juan as a person who's so intellectually up to date with the political debate to actually reflect that. Personally, I welcome the question because I never thought of Juan as a person who reflected that, because I always put Juan in the category of, you know, not too intellectual, shall we say. I would be more inclined to say no. I think that Juan is more like, I want my stuff. I want to have more land. I want to have more sheep. I want to have more material goods. And we can actually think about that possibility. But or we can think about the fact that as the Second Republic is coming to a closure, Yerma's impossibility of giving birth is the impossibility of the Republic to actually generate children and continue and thrive.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks.